You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by Molly's Spirits. And now, The Porchcast.
Welcome to episode 87 of The Porchcast. My name is Tristan, joined by my co-host, Bryant, peering in from the corner.
Yeah,
and we are thrilled to be joined by the crew at Weldworks Brewing today. We've got Kristen Popcheff, Director of People and Culture, Skip Schwartz, Head Brewer, and Roy Van Anda, Community Engagement Manager. How's it going, you guys?
Great.
Good.
Great. Thanks for having us in here. We always like to be transparent, so I wanted to make it clear that both Bryant and I have been doing consulting for Weldworks over the past year, so don't want to get any confusion there, but in general, I've been a Weldworks fanatic for the better part of, what, 5-6 years now, I think? I actually came across the team at their very first Big Beers pouring as a brewery, and we kind of were the first national publication to write about them on Porch Drinking, so it feels like a cool full circle opportunity to get to be a part of this team for a little bit. A big thank you for you guys for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for
having us. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, for those of you all who aren't super, super familiar with Weldworks, we'll definitely go over a little bit of an intro of kind of how they got to be where they are today. But for those who are maybe a little bit more familiar with the brand, we're definitely going to dive into some of the more exciting news and developments that's been surrounding the brewery over the past year and now moving forward. But before we dive into all of that, do want to give a special shout out to a couple of our sponsors. A big thank you to OnTap Credit Union. OnTap Credit Union isn't your average bank or credit union. It's different. It is Colorado. It was founded in 1954 in Golden, Colorado. Just great financial advice in a friendly environment where you can relax and enjoy yourself. With OnTap, members come first, which is why they offer low loan rates for cars, homes, credit cards, and more. And with OnTap's mobile app, you could have access to your account, whether you're meeting friends at a local brewery, out on the slopes, or wherever your next adventure takes you. OnTap Credit Union is located in Golden, Arvada, or OnTap Credit Union, ontapcu.org. Member owned, Colorado proud, federally insured through NCUA. Also, we're excited to share that Winter Brewfest has joined us as a sponsor for the next few months. Mark your calendars for the Winter Brewfest at Mile High Station in Denver on Saturday, January 22nd. This year's Winter Brewfest is shaping up to be the best beer festival of the year with daytime and evening sessions, so you won't have to worry about missing out on all the fun. There's even a VIP evening session that gives you access to the festival an hour early, as well as special beer and cheese pairings only available to those VIPs. General admission starts at $45 in advance and includes unlimited sampling and a souvenir glass. Live music and variety of food trucks will be on site. Plenty to choose from with over 30 brewers, 80 different kinds of beverages to try. Get your tickets at winterbrewfest.com or purchase tickets for Winter Brewfest on January 22nd. Start the new year off the right way. All right, now that we've...
dry January. Let's go to the Winter Brewfest.
That's right. No dry January, we're just drinking rye January.
That was a really impressive reading of your sponsors.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah.
Like, that's yeah. Tough to do, let alone do it live.
That's right.
That was, yeah.
Well,
very little hiccups there. Would not have done that.
Well, thank you guys so much. And yeah, like I said, we'd love to share for those who maybe are just coming across Weldworks for the first time, or maybe are still, you know, just getting to know you guys. Love to share a little bit of y'all's backstory. You know, it's kind of a cool time to be talking about you guys because two of the kind of preeminent beers that first came down the lineup are now back available this week with Steam Barrel and then also Coffee Coconut Stout. But Kristen, you've been part of this since essentially day one, right?
Day like -4 months or something yeah. Like that. Yeah.
Tell me about kind of when you were first introduced to Colin and Neil and kind of what their vision was then and kind of where that's kind of evolved over time.
Yeah. So I met them in, I'd known Colin a little bit, just had some mutual acquaintances through other jobs and such. And then I kind of hooked up with them in October of 2014. Yeah. It was just kind of like, oh, we're starting a brewery, and you know, I guess we'll need someone to, you know, kind of work with us, work in the tap room and all that stuff. So I got to see the last, like, 4 or 5 months of construction, which was really cool because, like, it was a total DIY project.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bunch of Neil's friends, Colin's friends, just homebrewers that used to, you know, meet up in Neil's garage prior to opening that would just come out, like, every Saturday and, like, just, you know, paint walls and take down drop ceilings and just do kind of whatever needed to be done.
Homebrew club on steroids.
It was intense.
Hey, we need you guys to power wash my deck now.
yeah, just side project. Yeah, put their whole families to work and everything. We would have a ball. But yeah, then we opened up in February of 2015. So it was a really quick turnaround from their initial just conception of wanting to open up a brewery. It was all completed in really less than a year. It was just very small scale. We had a lot of buddies that would volunteer in the tap room with us, and just hearing them talk about it, you know, early on, it was just kind of like, yeah, you know, people would always ask, first of all, like, why Greeley? And it's like, well, that's their home.
Yeah.
You know, I would
not be. That's
where
we're from. That's where we want to be.
Right, it's where we live.
Yeah,
why would it not be Greeley? There was no, you know, grand plan to try to take over the world or anything like that. It was, you know, hey, we're dedicated to having this downtown local spot. And we just want it to be a community hub, and we just hope that we can, you know, accomplish just that one goal of just having the space for the locals to come and appreciate. Opened up with 4 beers on tap. I mean, yeah, the Steam Barrel IPA, which at the time was just called IPA, a red, which is called Half-Ass, it still is. And then, yeah, our it was just coffee stout at the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, our growth over the past 7 years is been a crazy awesome roller coaster, but it's been just so organic, you
sure.
know. There was never this like, we're gonna be, you know, 15,000 barrels in 2022 or anything like that. It was just the step process of like, oh, people are interested, and oh, we have this Media Noche brand that's kind of gaining some traction.
Sure.
Wait, wow, there's people in other states that are interested in our beer. It's just been such a humbling process, like from the get-go to the point of where we are now.
Yeah, and correct me I'm wrong, but so when I first got introduced to Wildworks, when I attended the Vale Big Beers Belgians and Barley Wines Festival, I remember sitting on a bus to the fest, and sitting across from me happened to be Colin, who was like, hey man, we just started this brewery, you should come check out our booth, we got a bunch of different like fun stouts and stuff. And I remember going to try it, and I think you all might have had, you know, 4 or 5 different Achromatic variants, and maybe like I think you might have already had the first Media Noche available at the time, and I was just blown away. And from what I remember, Neil and Colin had been attending Big Beers for a number of years, and they finally said, hey, if we win a medal at this year's homebrew competition, we're gonna start a brewery the very next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that kind of how that initially came about?
Yeah, like that's our origin story,
yeah.
Basically it was. Because, you know, they would always joke, Neil would always say, like, every home brewer has a bunch of buddies that are drinking their beer for free, and
sure.
So you got to open up a brewery, you
yeah.
know? But Neil was
And
really,
to win at Big Beers, I mean, for those who aren't familiar, Big Beers is one of the preeminent festivals, at least most highly regarded in the industry, because they do such great education, but also the homebrew competition and pairing events and the full holistic kind of brewery festival, beer festival experience. And to medal at that was pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, it absolutely was.
He got two, yeah.
Yeah, it was, he was definitely doing something special, and everyone,
yeah.
Colin, you know, most definitely could see that.
Sure.
So it was kind of like that little twist of the arm, be like, all right, if you do this, you know, but they made good on it, and
that's
here
awesome.
We are 8 years later.
Very cool. Now, would you say that Juicy Bits was kind of the big moment where things kind of kicked up a notch for the brand?
It was actually a couple things that happened all at once. Releasing Juicy Bits was definitely one of them. The other was that was around our 1 year mark where Media Noche was let out into the
sure.
wide world.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we also, I don't know how we even were up for this at all, but we won USA Today's Best New Brewery of the Year.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like all of this like coming in at the same time, like a little bit of this notoriety and then this amazing, you know, New England and then Media Noche being what it is. Yeah, that all happened like around our 1 year mark.
Okay, very cool. Now, one of the things that I love most about Wildworks, even before my time consulting for you guys, was just kind of the people and the culture that you all have developed here over the years. And And I think, you know, Kristen, that speaks to the fact that you have a role now that is completely focused on director of people and culture. So tell me a little bit about that approach and what Colin and Neil kind of saw in terms of that need of that position, and also just how they helped to build such a fun environment to work in.
Yeah, I mean, as I kind of spoke about our growth being organic, so has the side of it. I mean, it was never a question of trying to make it the best, you know, working home for employees possible. Sure. It's always been, you know, what do you need in terms of education? What do you need in resources? How can we make your life better? How can we amp up benefits? How can we keep pay competitive? Just thinking about those things before people ever had to ask was just always part and parcel of how we operated, even when it was back in the day and I was the only one. So just as we grow, like, that ethos, that philosophy just becomes ingrained in everyone else that we bring in and the rest of the managers and the rest of the leadership. So a culture just kind of becomes what it is simply by having, like, that heart and wanting to talk about it and put the resources behind that and the communication behind that as well. So yeah, it was just kind of like a really cool evolution of, well, we're doing all these things and we're focusing on all these things, and I'm spending so much time ensuring that other people are focusing on these things and thinking about them that honestly it just became a job because it was always a priority, and it just, you know, became a full-time focus.
That's very cool. And I know we don't have to dive deep into this, but I mean, even in the time working here, like, employees have access to, you know, media notes every release, they have 401k benefits, you know, you all do so many team building events and whatnot, and it really is just like a fantastic place to work. In fact, you all won an award for kind of the workplace, right?
Yeah, great places to work.
One of those places.
We're not the only one.
A place to work.
And I mean, part of that too is the community building side. And Roy, I know you came in through AmeriCorps, which is something that's near and dear to my heart as well. Tell me a little bit about kind of how you got introduced to Weldworks, and also kind of this now evolving into this full-time role in terms of community development and nonprofit work. I think it's something that Weldworks does better than almost any other brewery that I've ever seen. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like many people here, like, my introduction was definitely unique.
Yeah.
That's just a cool element to it, and from the beginning. But yeah, my introduction was through AmeriCorps, specifically, like, the VISTA program, to help with the 501c3 Weldworks Community Foundation, building that out and just kind of, like, putting more intentionality behind, hey, like, we have this awesome invitational that happens annually, and all the funds are going to go towards the foundation, which then we can allocate back out to the community. So trying to find the right partners to make sure that the things that we're backing with financial support, and even, like, awareness building and all that, like, are, like, truly good programs, and then just find ways to kind of, like, direct our efforts to be the most impactful.
Sure.
But, like, really quickly, like, months into it, it, like, became, like, super clear that there's an element to this that, like, just like everything else Kristen kind of expressed about the culture and everything that happens, like, from within what this place is already, like, it's very often, like, authentic, like, the authenticity of it is, like, really important, and there's, like, just a lot of kind of organic synergy that happens. There's an element of that that we're, like, we don't want the separation between, like, external community engagement to be disconnected from what we're doing internally.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that we want, like, staff involvement to be involved, that, like, be aware of, and, like, we want everyone to kind of have input and nice kind of, like, cohesive bridge between everything. So
yeah, I know, like, Weldworks, like, offers opportunities for employees to volunteer for a
yeah.
day and you know, help to participate with the organizations that you help sponsor, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, it's a big thing, I think, for people, especially those, like, working, like, front of house, to be able to kind of, like, talk a little bit to any guests that might come in and might be curious, like, hey, like, what are you guys kind of all supporting, what's going on? And you can kind of show that, like, yeah, we have a great product, we have a great kind of community here, but we're taking what we do really well internally and trying to face it externally out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, there's definitely, like, kind of, like, some incentives that we try to, like, throw out there that a lot of other companies do, honestly. But a big part of that is also to kind of, like, position people we have internally, as well as people externally within the communities, so that, hey, you actually have some decision-making power.
Mm.
And it's a collaborative effort, because, like, trying to go after these things is it's definitely difficult. So I guess all I have to say is my introduction was unique, but it quickly became realized that
there was some, there needed to be kind of like more of a full-time position in terms of like there's a company angle to this, and as well as building out what needs to happen on like the 501c3 foundation type of things to make it cohesive.
And just for those who might not be familiar with all the giving efforts, I know that you all have the Waldberg's Diversity Scholarship. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit, just a brief overview of what that was? And I know it's now developed into a full endowment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The endowment that kind of like went underway right when I jumped on board.
Sure.
So great to know that right when I kind of joined in. But yeah, that's a diversity scholarship through UNC, and it is not fully funded yet. We are going to fund it all the way up to $100,000. And once we do, then it does become that kind of repeating endowment. So every year, someone's going to be able to take that diversity scholarship, and I think it's going to be at $4,000 a year to kind of like assist with whatever it is they are interested in doing. There is like a brewery focus to it, but in all reality, it's kind of open as well. Because like even,
sure.
I feel like a big part of like what it is here is like, yes, brewing is a big part of who we are, but we're also not afraid to kind of like expand outside of that as well. So the scholarship kind of reflects that same mentality.
But primarily it's offering opportunities for people of diverse backgrounds to potentially get into brewing sciences, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
As well as everything.
Yeah, totally.
And then I know that 10K IPA was a really cool launching point this year as well. Tell us a little bit about 10K. I know it's evolving, but tell us a little bit about kind of where it was in its form this year.
Yeah, so that was also something that kind of just like happened as it was already underway and I joined on. I was like, hey, we got this cool tool. Now, how do we go about using it and kind of developing it?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good tool for me to have in the back of my pocket to kind of see like what are the avenues in which we can give back to the community and how do we kind of like just deliver that in a good way.
Sure.
So the 10K IPA, first of all, is a great beer. Right, it's good.
That's awesome. I think Brandon wrote that recipe.
Yeah.
Ship Brewers.
And is it a West Coast style IPA?
Well, so it started out as a hazy double IPA, and it has evolved into a single IPA. It's just a little more approachable, but also Roy can tell you about its future.
Yeah. Yeah, so great beer, and then it's that kind of fundraising beer to where the 10K, it's not a run, even though it sounds like it. It quickly became realized that it is definitely misinterpreted as being like a running event, and there is a huge culture around running and beer, which has always interested me. But yeah, the kind of the 10K is in reference to we're committing to at least donating $10,000 to a charitable organization each quarter,
okay.
Which is kind of a great pledge and like benchmark for us to just ensure that we are continually giving back.
Yeah.
And so we have done that, and the process has been like me kind of going through and like vetting certain organizations, ensuring that it's all kind of like copacetic and it's legit. And there's a lot of great organizations out there. And kind of like structuring our like internal values to make sure it matches up with their approach about going and addressing a usually very complicated community issue.
Sure.
The way it's developing now, though, is it's likely going to be revamped into something very different but similar. But the overall approach to it will remain the same, along with like the other programs to build out coming into next year. And essentially, that approach is we're looking for like. Really, like, just well-trusted organizations going after a community need that we believe is essential, and that we're backing a specific program or project, and really we're just trying to kind of, like, continually push along and fuel momentum that already exists.
Cool.
Because there's benefit in creating things from scratch, but there's also a lot of good stuff out there, and if we can find the right people to partner with, we might as well support efforts that are already underway.
Yeah. And thus far, I know through 10K, you all have worked with Habitat for Humanity, Give a Shirt, which is kind of a breast cancer organization, and then the LGBTQ community, and as well as the diversity and inclusion community, right?
Yeah, the big one in there, well, not the big one, but one of them also was SAVA and AWP, so Sexual Assault Victims Advocacy,
yep.
And A Woman's Place. And we did a partnership with them, which was actually pretty cool. Through a series of meetings and like site visits, that is kind of recognized like, hey, these two organizations work together and they work at this, like, they do this great cause, and we might as well kind of like collaborate where possible.
Great.
So, yeah, it's definitely jumped around from different causes.
Very neat, very neat. Now, for kind of the, this is also a very exciting time for WildWorks in general. I know that there's a lot of expansion stuff happening, new location coming down the pipeline, hopefully next year. We've got a new restaurant opening here. Chris and Skip, tell us a little bit more about kind of like what's on the horizon for WildWorks and what people can get excited about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one coming down the pike that is going to, you know, definitely be the most noticeable is opening the kitchen here on site. My husband Tim is actually our head chef.
It's called the Annex, right?
Yeah, we're calling it the Annex because the space that it's going into, we've always just kind of referred to as our Annex space, which it is. You know, we've in parcels taken over the building and now block. But yeah, that's on track to hopefully open up, you know, next month, barring any major construction things, which is always a possibility. But yeah, we're just kind of looking forward to having a menu that kind of reflects the ethos in which we approach our products, which is kind of just the idea of you come in and you see 30 beers on tap and you're gonna go for flights. So we want to have a menu that kind of pairs that experience of like a lot of kind of small plates and stuff like that.
Sure.
He doesn't actually talk that much with me about the menu, so I don't really know exactly what's coming.
It's very secret.
It's very secret.
Yeah.
I talked with these guys, I don't know.
I know.
But yeah, that's the first one that people start to see the build out, like the big sheet in the tap room is going to come down soon.
Yeah.
And it'll enhance the tap room experience as well. We look forward to putting together like some cool events, like, you know, dinners and stuff like that
dinners,
too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know the one that we keep getting asked about the most, Colorado Springs. We don't have to dive too much into that because I know it's still kind of an enigma of sorts, but there's still plans to open in Colorado Springs, correct?
Yeah, long story short, it's coming. we're definitely positioned in a better place with a little bit more surety of, not exact timeline, but we're still hopeful for like spring, summerish, and don't quote me on that because Lord knows what could happen. But we're definitely at a point with construction where a lot of the big hurdles and the big scary stuff that can blow up in your face, we're kind of past that. Not to say that more issues, like everyone's had issues with expansion.
We're past everything when it's built and open.
We're not past
until
everything. We're past a lot of the big scary stuff.
Yes.
If things go according to plan, we have a more set timeline than we would have if you asked us, you know, 6-8 months ago.
Totally. Yeah. Well, that's super exciting. And I know there's been a lot of expansion stuff happening here as well. But Skip, I mean, part of the expansion is in the room that we're in.
Yeah.
Skip, tell us a little bit about this barrel room that we're standing in or sitting in. And then also, you know, what other kind of brewing innovation stuff that people are excited about.
So, you know, the barrel room was a project that we were looking around and, you know, when I first started, I took over, part of my job was to manage the barrel program. And I would look around in our old barrel spaces and I just said, like, guys, like, we have this thing that people want to see and they want to be, it needs to be part of a tour. And it's a part of the experience is to see where these barrel aged beers are, you know, stored at. And if you're going to walk through it and you walk in the room, it smells like wood and it's a cool experience to be a part of. And I was like, we need to showcase this in a different way. And we just so happened to have a part of the property that had garage doors built in it. And one of the things I was like, we need to have windows that you can see it from the street. And it's something like, you know, like I said, it's just seeing it and being a part of it makes people feel a connection to it in a different way than just drinking the beer, you know. And I'm hoping that we can get tours going again soon when, you know, COVID is kind of, so more people can come in here and experience it. And, you know, we were able to work with a good buddy of mine, Armando, who painted our beautiful portrait, mural, which you cannot see, but I'm looking at.
Looks
so
great.
This is a great podcast.
It's a great podcast. I understand how podcasts work. You can't see anything. So I love it. But it's really
itself,
cool.
It's kind of a nod to The Shining, right?
It's a nod to The Shining. And the big thing is for us was everyone can paint. All these breweries have, you know, beer-related paintings and this. And, you know,
just
when we were hops, and like if you're in a barrel room, they paint barrels. It's like, all right, we get it. Like, we make beer, and like, but also, like, you know, we kind of looked at our friends Burial in Asheville, as like the iconic painting of, you know, Tom Selleck and Chunk from the Goonies. It doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because it's just iconic. Like, when you see that, you think of Burial, you think of Asheville, you think of their amazing portfolio of beer. And so, like, we wanted something that, like, kind of stuck out. Kristen and I kind of worked with Armando a lot on this, and we're both big horror fans, and we kind of wanted to also make it kind of Colorado-centric, so we picked The Shining. And when we realized, once he kind of started drawing it, that we were going to paint just three children on the wall. So we had to switch it up, and we were like, hey, how can we make this not just three children on the wall? And so he was like, well, let's paint skulls on the two girls. So I know this is a podcast and no one can see what I'm talking about. So it's Danny, the little child from The Shining. I'm going to describe it frame by frame. It's Danny, and he's on his little tricycle, and he's looking, right? Okay. Again, you can't see anything. There's the carpet pattern on one side, right? And then you have the two little girls from The Shining. You know, they're holding hands, the twins. Yeah, they're there. But now they have sugar skulls painted on their faces instead, so we don't just have little girls. And so that's basically...
It's different now.
It's different now. Yeah, exactly. It's two...
I think we're
going
to start another podcast.
Skip describes murals. Just things in general. I'm really good at describing things. Yeah. So like, now you guys all at home in podcast land can picture what I'm talking about, and you have no idea what I'm talking about. What were you talking about? Oh, so this room. So yeah, the reason why we got this room... was just kind of just to have the experience of understanding the barrel, and also we were kind of just running out of storage for barrels was the main thing.
Well, one of the things that I love most about coming into here is just like the multitude of different barrels that you have. How, not to put you on the spot here, but how many barrels would you say approximately does Wellworks have
currently? So currently we're at, we just emptied 8 today, so we're at 380. Ooh. No, sorry.
430.
430. My dyslexia ended up. Yeah.
I was just gonna walk the halls going one.
Yeah, that's how. That's literally. I keep track because I'm like, yeah. No, we've had up to 500 at one point. You know, the goal is kind of to stay in between the 450 and 500 mark. That's just kind of where we think the sweet spot is. Right now, we're just a little bit low. Because we've been doing so many projects. I mean, I think in the last 3 months, we've released like upwards. We had a 3-pack. I think we've released like 9 beers this, like in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
Barrel aged beers. So like we're kind of at like a moving spot for just emptying barrels. We have tons of barrels that are mature, and it's fun that we're actually able to, with this amount of barrels, we're able to let things go a little bit longer and kind of hit a spot where we feel is where we want it to be. You know, Media Noche has always been 18 months in barrels, and now we're kind of looking closer to like 22 months.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool for us that we're able to have that time versus, you know, lots of breweries don't have the luxury of the space, the effort that it takes, the money up front that it takes to produce these long aged beers. And also the other thing that we're in a climate where we can produce these beers, and Media Noche is such a thick beer that it, at a year old, it's not ready versus, you know, somebody in Florida making a barrel aged beer can do it in 12 months. And it's just as part of it is our atmosphere, our, you know, the humidity, just Colorado, the altitude, all of it plays a factor. And so, you know, I know that, like, you know, Texas, for example, I know we just did a project with Pint House down in Texas, and they were able to age stuff a lot quicker because the humidity and they're at a lower altitude. And so, you know, it's not that I'm saying that ours is better because it's older. I'm just saying ours is different because it has to be older.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of something that Media Noche has been known for, is the long aging.
Totally. Now, I know there's been a lot of talk in the distilling world about kind of the sweet spot for aging for, you know, spirits like whiskey. Sure. For Colorado, and I know you talked about kind of like different climates having different impacts, but like for Colorado, do you feel like, and probably this is not something that you have come across too much because it's still kind of in its infancy, but are there barrel aged beers that can go for, you know, upwards of 5 to 10 years that are still retain its quality? Or is that something where it's lower and you're finding that kind of like, you know, 12 to 22 month range being kind of the sweet spot?
You know, I think right now I don't have the answer for a 5-year-old. We do have we've used 3-year-old barrels before. I do still think they have something to add to it, or add to a blend. Sure. I don't think that a 3-year-old, all 3 to 5-year-old barrels will make a great beer. Sure. I also don't know that because we haven't done it. You know, sure. Like, so it's hard to say. I do think that, you know, they've been able to find a sweet spot in whiskey or in bourbon, but also, I mean, they follow a lot more specific rules in bourbon than we do in beer. I mean, you can look at our barrel-aged stout versus another person, and like our process and our ingredients and the way that we boil in 3-hour mashes, and that's completely different than someone else. So you're already starting at a different starting point. With bourbon, you have these very specific rules of 51% corn, it's got to be this proof going into the barrel. So there's a lot of the spirit is generally the same. Yeah. The conditions in which they're aged is where, you know, in the lengths of time in bourbon is where you're going to see the actual differences.
Totally.
So since we all start at such a different starting point, that it's hard to say. And I mean, we also have a whole different thing that at the Craft Beer Brewers Conference, I talked about it. We do 30-hour boils.
Yeah.
That's insane, and lots of people were like, "That's insane," but I also have to remind people we're also at a different altitude. We boil at 204 degrees. Everyone else boils at 212. Good catch. That's a very good catch. So at 212, you're going to form different sugars. You're going to form different levels of the Maillard reaction.
Yeah.
We're going to have different levels of caramelization, and so it's a completely different process. And if you want to mimic the 30-hour boil at Weldworks, maybe we should look at boiling it, you know, running your overnight boil at 204 degrees. You know, that's completely different.
Gotcha.
So again, our location has kind of been the biggest success thing for Media Noche.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and over the years we've talked about more different things about aging and all this, and everything kind of comes that we're just the right place to make this beer.
Totally. Now, in kind of talking about the beer itself, I feel like Weldworks was a little bit on the forefront, especially here in Colorado, on a number of different fronts. And obviously, one of the earlier producers of the hazy IPA style, but also a couple years ago, you all went crazy by producing 100 different SKUs in 1 year. Now that's grown over the past couple years. Tell us a little bit about, Kirsten, tell us a little bit about the idea behind the 100 different SKUs. And I know to accomplish that took a little kind of, you know, trust from your retail partners to accomplish that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was, we're always just looking to, like, push our boundaries just because we all kind of like a challenge.
Sure.
First and foremost. So I think maybe it was Jake or Neil, someone threw out that idea. And it was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it. Let's push our boundaries. We ended the year with like 125 or something like
sure.
that. Like, we blew right past it and kept going. And every year was kind of just compounded. We're dialing it back a little bit now.
No.
Well, attempting to.
Next year.
Next year.
We'll try again next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, you know, if it was an innovative idea for us, it was definitely an entirely different animal for a lot of our on and off prem partners to swallow. And our sales team was very patient in trying to work through all the hiccups that, you know, like, just the concept of you're not getting the same beer every week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, just all the behind the scenes, like, technical difficulties that go with that, and, like, you know, UPC codes and all this crazy stuff.
And even to switch to 16-ounce cans was kind of a significant hurdle, right, at first?
Yeah, that was definitely new at the time,
yeah.
And there was a lot of pushback and, you know, just like the it's never going to sell type thing. And then, of course, you know, now you look at the landscape now.
It's predominantly 16-ounce cans
out
in the marketplace.
Yeah, but, I mean, we just have a team that if there's any company in the world that knows how to roll with the punches, it's our people.
Yeah, totally. We're going to take a real quick break to give a thank you to another one of our sponsors. For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a land of adult beverage discovery at Molly's Spirits, offering a curated selection of beers, wines, and spirits in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including exclusive collabs and an extensive craft beer selection in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. I know you can definitely find Moldworks out there, so if you're looking to find Moldworks in the Denver area, check out Molly Spirits to get some beers, some 16-ounce cans from all the over hundreds of SKUs that you all are now producing. Now, jumping back into this kind of idea of innovation, Skip, you came on as Director of Innovation, and now you recently got a bit of a title change. Tell me a little bit about the role of head brewer and what that means to you.
What it means to me is a very big shoes to fill, literally and figuratively. I mean, Neil is a very tall human, which is very big feet. But honestly, no, I mean, what Neil has done over the last couple of years, I mean, to see somebody change beer that many times as fast as he did is just like, whoever's going to follow him is doomed anyways. So at least it was me. So the person after me will be able to do it really well. Because Neil, like I said, Neil is, I stop gushing. I have a man crush on him. So it's like, he's done so many great things. I mean, Medianoche, he changed, you know, he was one of the first people to look at extended boils and this, you know, extended aging and picking your wood to cater towards the beer rather than just putting a beer into wood. You know, he looked at it differently, and you know, that those things stand the test of time still. I mean, the way that he set up the barrel program was just different, and and that's why it stood out, is because it was like nothing anyone had before. And I think even now, you know, today people are still mimicking the Weldworks Medianoche mouthfeel and profile. And like, you know, when people say like, oh, it's thick, and I'm like, I still don't think it's as thick. It's like, you haven't reached Medianoche yet, you know? I think it has its own, in my opinion, like when you look at like thick beers, it's Medianoche thick is like kind of like the what everyone's shooting for right now. And so to be able to do that at such a, you know, one, at a young age, but also young as a brewer, professional brewer, is amazing. You know, like what he did with just Medianoche. And then we go into, you know, Juicy Bits. I mean, to one, you know, he came up with, he was able to write a beer without, like, you know, back in that time, no one was giving out answers on how to brew hazy IPA. Sure. You know, the Alchemist, John Kamish, Trillium, Treehouse, those guys were they didn't tell anybody how the fuck they were doing it. You know what I mean? That wasn't like general information at that time where you could just read a book and here it is. Scott Janisch didn't write a book. It wasn't there, you know.
Sure.
And so Neil was able to just taste beer and be like, this is what I think, and let's figure out how to do this and then create it. And then also come with a name like Juicy Bits. At the same time, it's like insane. He did all of that. So like
And it still stands the test of time.
And it still stands. And like the other thing that he did too then, which I think is one of the greatest moves, and I know that he'll cite Vinny Chilurzo as his source for this, he gave out the answers. So he figured out how to do the homework, and then he just let the whole class copy. And then this is where the floodgates open, and I think that's part of the reason why Juicy Bits is held in the regard, is he figured it out. Other people were slowly figuring it out and learning. But he figured it out and then just printed it in a magazine and just said, here, take it. He changed that, and it was like a different, you know, like in my opinion, it opened the doors to put other breweries where they are now.
Totally.
I think to follow in his footsteps, it's really it's an honor for me to try.
Sure.
But it's also a lot of pressure to be like, well, what are you gonna do? And it's like, I don't know. You guys tried cold IPA, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's tough. So it's a really hard spot for me to be in. But I'm really excited for the challenge. I'm really excited that I still get to talk to him whenever I need help, because he is such a great resource. And so, like I said, I know that your question was about me, but I'm going to talk about other people.
Sure.
Because we have a great team of people. Like I said, with Nick Sandiford as our lead brewer, Derek Gold as our production manager, you know, Jordan Wheeler as our package. Like, we have a great team, Matt in our lab, like such a good team of people that like, I won't be able to fail because of them. They won't like let me, like when I have a bad idea, I have Derek, I go, hey man, is this a good idea? And he's like, no, it's terrible. I'm like, okay, good, good, good. But you know, so like, I think that I have more support than Neil did.
Yeah.
And I do think he had great support with Kristen and Colin, but also I think they were kind of out of that lane where they're like, we're just gonna trust you.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like...
It's more on like operations.
Right, yeah.
I was really good at like hosing down the brew house floor. Yeah. That was my contribution.
Yeah, exactly. That. And so I think...
Too modest.
Yeah. That's not all she did. Yeah. For sure. But yeah, so long story short, it's a lot of pressure and I'm excited for the job.
Now, you talked a little bit about kind of wood innovation and kind of like
yeah.
this approach of using quality barrels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the coolest things about walking through here is you see... You know, Blanton's barrels. You see mm-hmm. Eagle Rare barrels. You see Pappy barrels every now
right.
and then. What I guess excites you the most in terms of kind of like some of these specialty barrels that you've been able to acquire, and I guess how do you treat those independently whenever you have different kinds of barrels come in?
So right now we're having trouble because we have all these great barrels and I don't want to add coconut to any of them.
Yeah.
Totally. Or I don't want to add anything to it. I just want it to be it. But again, we understand the way the market works and that's what people want. So sure. we'll give it to them. But when we treat barrels, so when we get a nice barrel in, some let's say like our first Weller barrels we got in, right?
Mm-hmm.
We try to mimic what they're doing in their recipe. So like, you know, with like, Weller's high wheat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to make a wheated medianoche, which is something that we had never done before. So we have, you know, we have midnight wheat in there, we have flaked wheat, we have raw wheat. We're piling on these kind of things that are mimicking the flavors in the barrels. Like another example is we had you know, some really nice rye barrels. We're going to use different kind of rye, chocolate rye. We're going to try to mimic what they're doing in our recipes to have the barrel complement kind of the recipe of the beer and kind of have them play off each other. So that's something that we've done. The other thing is, like, I mean, it's always exciting. Wood is so exciting in the fact that, like, there's so much stuff that we can't even have, we don't even have access to.
Sure.
That, like, the world is infinite, and the amount of woods that are out there that are being, barrels are being made out of in, you know, Africa with teak wood or, you know, mahogany and, you know, Amberana in Brazil, like we don't even have access to this, or, you know, Japanese oak and French oak. There's so many things that we aren't using right now that it gets me excited about, and like different spirits, and we're investigating everything that we can to try to find something interesting that people want to try.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if no one else wants to try it, I want to try it, and I think that's enough reason for anyone to do anything, is that you personally want to see it happen. And
sure,
I think if you're excited about it, other people will be excited.
Well, speaking of that, and I want to bring you guys in as well, but I know Skip is notorious around these parts of bringing in just the weirdest kind of culinary delights, I think might be the best way to put it.
I wouldn't put it that way.
Brought in, a bunch of different kinds of, what's the bunnies? Marshmallow peeps, yeah. You brought in... Like different
candy corn,
yeah.
Thanksgiving flavor.
Thanksgiving, yeah.
What's the weirdest thing that Skip's made you all try in terms of these bizarre foods?
Yeah, Roy might not have had any of the bizarre foods.
You
had some of the sodas, right? Like the ranch soda or anything?
No,
I guess the
candy canes
were last year.
The candy canes were last year. We had more on order.
The first thing that came to mind, I know this has nothing to do with like this necessarily, was that Malort marshmallow.
That's actually all Jake.
Yeah,
that was Jake.
But also, one thing I will be happy is that Jake loves to join me on these quests.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm very happy about it, other people being a part of it.
Is this something that you developed just naturally? Is this something that you were already interested in, or was it just because, you know, this is such a flavor-driven brewery and you all incorporate so many different styles
and
adjuncts and whatnot?
The big thing that kind of got that going in my life is kind of been like, when you read about all these things, they're like, you can have a lot of people are born with a really great palate. Also, people can make a great palate by just trying everything
yeah.
and understanding like what they're supposed to taste. And like, if you try, what do you say? Macaroni and cheese.
Candy cane,
right? So you don't realize that you're tasting like isovaleric acid in a different form. And so once you start being able to connect all these dots, and then all of a sudden you can taste something and go, okay, this is what I'm tasting. And then, you know, it's like a piano player who hears a song and they can play it, right? You can do the same thing with flavors, and you don't have to have a great palate. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I have a great palate. No, I've just tried really hard to taste a lot of things, understand what I'm tasting. If there's a notes on what I'm tasting, take that in, and then you can recall those notes later on. And, you know, smell everything, taste everything. Even if it doesn't sound like it's going to be something you like, it helps you in the future, because then you're like, oh man, your smell and your taste are like your best memory things. Totally. So like you'd be like, oh, I remember I was in Atlanta with Tim. We had this one thing that makes me think of that. And so it's like, all right, cool. So you just kind of build that. And I think tasting weird things is the best way to build that memory.
I think that was probably the best piece of advice that was given to me when I first got into, you know, the craft beer world. I forget who it was, but someone was saying, literally just go taste everything. Like, go taste dirt, go taste, you know, like grass, like things that you wouldn't necessarily think of tasting. But like you build up your palate, your understanding of these different taste profiles that, you know, to the common consumer, when people read these ridiculous marketing descriptions, I agree. Sure. Probably 60% of the time, 70% of the time, it's absolute bullshit. But I do think that there are special cases where I'll recall like a children's candy that I had, and that's the exact right. profile that I get from a specific beer. And so being able to make that mental connection helped me from like an understanding standpoint to make that connection to a specific beer.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have to ask real quick.
Sure.
Did you try a scoop of dirt?
I have eaten dirt. Yeah.
I grew up eating dirt, yeah. So like it wasn't a big. Dirt's an easy flavor.
I mean, like, sure, yeah.
Glue and dirt, two favorite top food groups.
Compare different types of dirt.
Glue and glue and yeah, definitely. As a child, those are my top of my pyramid. Top of my pyramid. Bottom of my pyramid.
It all changes.
Yeah, well, have you tried like volcanic soil? Like, there's all different kinds of soil.
Yeah, let's not
limit ourselves. Are you eating like clay, acidic dirt? Like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Exactly. You gotta understand there's different dirts.
Well, to close out the show, I'd love to hear kind of, you know, what might be a beer that kind of really stood out to you all, either a Weldworks beer or a non-Weldworks beer. Since we're at the end of the year, was there a specific beer that you'd like to give a shout out to, just to kind of close out the show? We'll start with Skip. Why don't we?
I'm gonna do a plug real quick for the Hot Beer Festival. It's the inaugural Hot Beer Festival at Primitive Brewing Company. I think that's the Primitive Beer in Longmont. It's gonna be us, Cohesion, who makes some of the best beer on the planet right now. And Primitive, so there's two of the best breweries, and then Weldworks are going to be at this festival, so I advise everyone to go. If you like Christmas, they're doing a holiday market. We're doing hot beer. It's going to be a really good time. It's from 8 to 12 p.m. No, 12 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, the 18th of this month, December. I hope this show comes out this month, but... I had to do one plug real quick.
You mentioned hot beer. Tell us. Yes. Tell
hot beer.
Our listeners,
so we're literally exactly making that. Beer that is hot in temperature. We're going to be using pokers, which is this crazy, like an actual fire poker that we're going to get red hot. We're going to shove it right in your beer. It's going to be warm. It's going to be caramelized. It's going to have, you're going to have a little beer marshmallow on the top
it's
of your
kind
beer.
Kind of like hot cocoa.
Hot
right?
cocoa. Like cider. And we're using beers that are like designed to be served hot. I think we're doing a Glue Creek. Glue Creek is from Primitive. We're doing a Wassail, which is an old school medieval English beer style that was barrel aged. And then I know Cohesion's this Czech style because that's what they do best, Czech lager. I think it's going to be an amber or something like that. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. Cool people. They're doing the holiday market so you can buy stuff for your family while you're there. Sorry for the plug. one of the beers I'm excited about from this year was Cerebral's what was it called? It's in Spanish, so I have no chance of.
But you can say Media Noche about 18 times.
Well, that's because that's been burned into my brain that I have to know how to say that. Because when I started, I didn't know how to say it. It was Medium Nachos. Cerebral's their Fuego the Smoke and Mirrors beer. And it was it blew my mind. It was aged in Mezcal barrels and Woodford Reserve, the chocolate rye barrels. And it was something I've never experienced before. There was no adjuncts in it, and it was just beautiful. I think their adjuncted version won a medal at GABF this year, a gold medal, which was well-deserved. It was one of those beers where I drank it, and as I was drinking it, I slowly just didn't let anyone else drink it near me, and I finished the bottle, and it was fantastic. Just a light smoke, just complex flavors, all from barrel. Beautiful beer. Sean, if you're listening, thank you for making that. Chris, you can send me more.
Do you happen to have a standout beer?
Yeah, I gotta say, just because like it's the one that I remember like telling people about for like weeks after. I'm gonna need your help on this one. It was from Forager. It was when James was cracking those bottles for us. The maple.
The it was Nillos. Yeah, it was Nillers.
Yeah.
Was that with the one with the maple syrup? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was just. Like, you know, because we were out at Forager, and, you know, they're, like, cracking some bottles for us, and I love barrel-aged stouts, but when you get into adjuncts, I enjoy a couple ounces, you know? Sure. So I just kind of go into it with this mindset of what I'm about to taste, and this one beer just, like, took me back, and, like, it kept, like, just kept being like, wow, 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 and, like, it was, yeah, this...
You asked me how we can make it, and I said, we can't.
But yeah, that was the beer for me.
Awesome. Yeah. And Roy, what about you? Do you have a stand-up?
I'm trying to like brainstorm if I can remember the name of it, but it's a West Coast that I had not too long ago at Peculiar that I loved, and I can't think of. Damn it. But I think throughout like so many hazies that I've had now, the more I spend time around here, now I've just grown a huge fondness for West Coast. So that's just kind of how that goes, though. But I guess like if I can think of a particular name, I'll throw in a plug for one of our beers. I've been drinking more and more of the Advanced Fluid Dynamics, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yes. But don't let it die.
I know. It's hazy. It's tropical. It's just like, it's a great kind of like riff off of Juicy Bits in a lot of ways. So.
Great call. Well, I want to thank all of you all for coming on the show. Roy, Kristen, Skip, thank you all so much. We really appreciate hearing more about Weldworks and all the fun stuff that you all have in mind or have coming down the pipeline. Big congrats again to the head brewer role,
thank
Skip.
You. Thank you.
And big thank you to all of you all for joining us. This has been episode 87 of the Porchcast. For those of you all who have been listening, if you like what you listen to, be sure to follow us on all of your listening devices, iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Play, whatever thing you're listening to us on, give us a follow and give us a little positive rating if you dig it. So. We'll check you later.